Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back under the cosh, were you?
Hey, I've been,
we're back. We're getting a little roll on, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Not missed a week yet, have we?
No.
A fortnight.
No environment, no Sam McGowan.
Disappointed on
Thursday
as well.
To be fair, I am as well.
he told me there'd be beer involved.
Said, that's
the only reason I'm here. I'll be totally honest with you. That's the only reason I've come, because there's beer involved.
This is where they do it. We're doing the bar in Manchester. This is
what? Like, I mean,
brilliant. No bother.
I think we've stepped it up a gear as well. Don Matteo today. You two ragamuffins.
No, I mean, listen, when Parky asked me, it was obviously, I'd listened to a couple and it was great to come down and have a go. It's kind of my style. Bit of banter and also talk a bit of football. I think it's
rough. That's yeah. What, the style
yeah.
is rough.
Rough. Well, I don't expect anything. No, it's nice to be here.
Proper career as well. You know, but it's a bit of a...
Is that Endo's tour as well?
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm used to when I've had my notes on you two, like three streams of paper for all clubs you've been at.
My medical notes.
And they went four or five clubs,
I mean, the thing about, I think I'd love to have played more games and stuff, but my injuries kind of got the better of me. And I probably was not looking after myself as well at times. And I think any player of my, I always feel that my age group were the last of a generation. The looks of myself, like myself, Ray Parler, people that age group, that drinking culture was such a huge part of being a footballer back then. I always felt if I wasn't with the lads in the boozer, I wouldn't get in the team. It finally, because like, if you weren't part of the group for the drinking, you never seemed like you got in the team. And at Liverpool, we used to joke about it sometimes. If you weren't part of the...
if you weren't out, you weren't
in. So, I mean, I probably took that a bit too much to heart. But obviously, being at a club like Liverpool, you probably wouldn't expect that. But I think it was just throughout football.
Do you think you got away with it more because... Everyone were doing it. Every footballer at every club. And I think, Tuesday club, Saturday club, Sunday club.
You know what you're now? There was Tuesday clubs. You know, some of the lads, some of the senior players at Liverpool, they liked a Thursday before
really?
A Saturday. Not a load of beer. You know, I think it was Rushy used to go out on a Thursday and have maybe six pints in a booze or somewhere and then go out and be, you know, an absolute legend on the Saturday. But it's part of his routine. I think a lot of players relaxed him a little bit. You know, sometimes I remember people like Stevie Nick. In the room, they probably have a couple of cans.
On a Friday?
You know, on a Friday, yeah. You know, and just not a lot, just a couple of drinks.
Take the edge off,
maybe help you sleep. And obviously, it didn't seem to affect them boys, did it? Because, you know, we're talking about lads who've kind of won everything and done everything.
Do you think it has that much of an impact? You know, if you do go out, say, Saturday night, Tuesday, did you, towards the end of the week, be thinking, fuck me, I'm struggling?
To be fair, Tuesday was always my cut-off.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't like to go out on a Wednesday or a Thursday. I'm not saying I never did it, because...
You just didn't enjoy it as much as you
I'd be lying.
You've got to get up for work next soon.
No, but I think if you got a good result on a Saturday, kind of the routine, I think, would be you go out for a few on a Saturday night, and obviously, living near Liverpool, we'd be able to go out if you won. If you lost, you had to go straight home. Yeah. So I'd go for a few pints around, you know, wherever it might be, on the way back from Anfield. I lived in Southport, so on the way back, I'd stop and have a few pints. Sunday was always my day out. Even though I was training Monday, Sunday was my day where I'd go for a drink, especially if we had a good result on Saturday. I used to love a Sunday session with the boys, you know, especially Razor Ruddock. Me and Razor Ruddock were
I was going to say, like, I mean, you come into Liverpool squad at what, 19?
Yeah.
And the names of the senior players, you know, especially like Julian Dixon, Neil Ruddock.
Yeah.
I can see them. You know,
Dixie wasn't a big drinker, to be fair. He didn't really get that much involved. He was always going home back to, I think, to travel back to London a lot and stuff. But
I always thought he'd be.
I remember Dixie, right? This is a true story. First day he walked into Liverpool's dressing room, you think, you know, when you do get that moment, it's like kind of a big thing. Dixie came in, I found out where he was sitting in the dressing room, didn't like it, just started ripping things off the walls, ripping coat hangers off and all kinds. It was just
first day,
yeah. I think he was kind of setting the stone, setting his, you know, his where he's at was like, I'm Julian Dix.
His persona, so everyone knew where they were.
But you know what? He was a great kid. You know, he wasn't big time or anything. He was the complete opposite of that. He was just a loon at times. You know
what I mean? But it out the day before,
but in a good way, I think. I always feel like that people like him and Razor had a lot of critical stuff off the field. But if you look at them two, great careers in a way. I mean, Razor Ruruk as well, especially. He was a great footballer. Everyone forgets that because they see the character.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, them guys could play football as well. You know, Dixie and Razor, unbelievable left foots between the pair of them, 2-1s. And yeah, I mean, me and Razor, we used to knock about quite a lot. But he was...
Were he older than you then?
Razor?
Yeah,
Razor's... I think he's 5 years older than me, 6 years.
So did he sort of take it under his wing?
Unfortunately.
Whatever wing
that's a big wing to.
It's funny because sometimes when I think back, I actually think to myself, I might still be playing if it wasn't for Razor Ruddock. He's got a lot to answer for. But you know, I mean, back then, if you think about characters like that, people won't see the other side of Razor, where I was struggling financially, as young lads. You know, at Liverpool, I was starting £27.50 a week as a YTS. Then my first pro contract was under £100. So I'm playing for Liverpool's first team, earning less than £100, which, you know, nowadays is, you know, it's... sure the YTS aren't earning a lot more.
And it's hard to get out 3 nights a week on
£100. Good job. Well, that's why I looked about the old
players. Even back then, it's hard to get 3 nights out for £100.
But just for example, I couldn't afford to buy a car. I was renting cars, I was getting cars off people, borrowing mum and dad's cars and stuff, and then... Razor just said, Razor, give me a car. Just give me an Audi A4. I was like, I've gone from having nothing to having a brand new car.
Yeah,
obviously, it was a sponsorship deal through the club. Because, you know, if you got to a certain point back then, everyone had a sponsored car. Razor wasn't using his, he bought his own. So he said, here you go, kid, you take mine. And for me, little things like that kind of go unnoticed in football. But not for me, that's, you know, Razor, people look at him as part animal. But also, you got to remember, he was a good guy, big heart, and also a good footballer.
Do you think that's, as a young kid, you respect him for doing that? Because he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do that. He went using his car, fair enough, yeah, there you go. It's levels. I'm sure Dom's done that for kids when Dom was 25.
That set the tone for me going forward. Yeah. That set the tone for me doing stuff for younger players and helping them out and giving advice. I think my advice might be different than Razor.
everything I did, just doing the opposite.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's about right. I made every mistake you can make. But no, I think the thing is, from football, and these guys will tell you, I think it's gone out of the game a little bit, is that respect, especially for your elder senior players around the squad. I think there should be still more of that in the game. I was certainly a big believer in that, and not just because I was at Liverpool, just the way I'd brought up in life. And it's just, you have to have a little bit of respect for the senior players in the dressing room, as long as they're not too controlling. But you know, I think when I was playing in the first team at Liverpool, I was still carrying the skips in and stuff. You know, sometimes nowadays I think we misses a bit of that kind of spirit within a team, and you don't see it because they're so pampered nowadays. Yeah. I still think that football misses a bit of it's the old school way a little bit.
It's apprenticeship at the end of the day, I suppose, isn't it? Working under the more experienced lads. Because is there none of that cleaning boots and stuff for the older players?
It happens
players
a little bit now, but not to any extent what it used to do. We used to, Monday morning, we used to sweep the stands after the game, Saturday. So I'm picking... believe it or not, I didn't eat any, but I'm sweeping pies up.
You must have had one. But
steak crust. Steak kidneys is quite nice cold, you know. So we're sweeping stands up. We're getting all the kit out in the morning, getting all the first team wives ready, cleaning his boots. We'd not leave till 4 or 5 o'clock till everything was.
Well, spot. Both of you must have done that, didn't you?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
I mean, I was the same. And I think at Liverpool, it was a huge test that he did that, and he did it properly, he did it well. Phil Thompson was the, obviously, you know, one of the most decorated players at Liverpool, lifted the European Cup, won how many league titles. He was the in charge of checking your jobs.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, you know, he's horrible. He was horrible to us. I mean, the number of times I wanted to call him Big Nose, get what you know, but you know, it's like, just leave me alone, because obviously the big baths at Anfield, the changing rooms were huge. You had to clean them. They had to be, you know, getting the vim with a scrubbing brush, going around the big baths, scrubbing them, hosing them all down, cleaning them in and out. And then he'd come in and go, not good enough, get back in there and do it again. And it was a test. And later on, when you speak to these people, we were testing you to see how you'd react. They want lads who will just get back on and do it. Yeah. They don't want lads to go, God, I'm not doing that again. They want lads to go and do it. And it's a test. And I still think it, even in the Premier League now, I think they could do a bit of that. They probably do a bit lower down leagues.
Yeah, I think so. No, you, in the Championship League One, I think they do.
It should be still part of your apprenticeship.
And it tests you mentally as well.
Yeah.
If they're it's not abuse as such, but if they're testing you mentally, if you get to a Saturday and you've got 30,000 people battering you, mentally you're ready and prepared for that. You'll either kick on, or you'll crawl up your own ass, and that defines why Dom had the career he had, and players who might have had more ability than Dom.
I always reference back when I was having bad times in my football career to the start and the basics in my football, and like the old boot room at Liverpool was like, it was a sanctuary, and it was like, it's so renowned in world football. It's like one of those places that created greatness from the Shankly right the way through to, you know, Bob Paisley, Joe Fagan, Kenny Dalglish, and it never left. And we used to clean the boots right outside the boot room. And I mean, it was an old wooden desk. It looked like a bloody joiner's desk. The day before a match day, as a young kid, one of us would just have to clean the old team's boots on your own. And I'd be in there struggling, say, on a Friday afternoon, looking what time my next bus is back to where I'm trying to get. You know, it's late, getting late afternoon. You'd have people like the great Ronnie Moran, God bless him, you know, we lost recently, and Roy Evans, and you know, and some of the old great coaches, they'd come and give you a hand to clean the boots.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about, you know, that's the kind of morals that I'm talking about. And I always used to reference back to them times when I was having a bad time as a player, about the basics in my football and about where it started. And if them people are still doing it, you know, Ronnie Moran, you know, I mean, he was at Liverpool for 50 years, won everything. But I tell you what, there wasn't anything he wouldn't help you with or do with you right the way through. I mean, I was so lucky them early days to have been around that environment. I'll never ever forget it.
Who was the biggest character in them early days when you...
Back in them dressing rooms, I mean, you can't look any further than probably Bruce Grobbelaar, people like that. I mean, Bruce, he was bonkers, but, you know, in a great way. He was just unique in what he did and the way he was a goalkeeper as well. He didn't do any goalkeeping training whatsoever. He never wanted to. He played with us, trained with us every day, played up front. he's actually a good, really good goal scorer, believe it or not. He hated going in goal. Like Bruce, before the game, used to volley the ball at the light switch, and we couldn't go out until he turned the lights off. But sometimes it'd take a while. But some days it'd take you getting the first one. But then you go, then you look at the other side of it, you've got people like John Barnes, who never even went out for a warm-up. Just do a hot bath and read the programme and read the paper. And just that was his preparation. And then it literally 2:55, the bell's going. Barnes, he's not even out of the bath yet. You know, so it's there were different characters around the dressing room. I think you have to accept with some of the top players, though, you just let them get on with it. I mean, Ian Rush on a Friday, I remember they stopped doing... Well, Friday, we used to always have steak and chips, you know, for our pre-match meals. You have what you want, really. And they stopped Rushy having, I think it was Graham Souness might have started to get the diet involved, and I think he was trying to stop Rushy having a steak and chips, and like Rushy's like, well, I've scored, you know.
I've scored a couple of goals.
Yeah, I've scored a few goals. I don't think he's done many harm over the years. So, and Rushy was determined to stick with that, and he did. He wanted to have his steak and
chips. If you're trying to stop a 33-year-old doing what he's done for the last 15 years and had an incredible career,
yeah.
You can't sort of... tell him that what he's done is wrong, because it can't have been.
No.
It can't have been. Whatever he's done, his 15-year career at the top of the game, won everything.
Yeah. Surely. I think nowadays the senior players kind of go, right, well, if I do it this way, I might play for another 3 or 4 years.
Mm.
I think people kind of thought, once I'm 35, back then, that's me done.
Yeah.
I was at Norwich with Dion Dublin.
Yeah.
And he was 40-year-old. And the phone would ring at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Brownie, I'm in the Belgian Monk, if you fancy a few pints.
Yeah.
And he'd been out like 2-3 in the afternoon. as long as he was home for 9, 10 o'clock and got his kit in,
yeah,
he'd be first in the gym next morning.
Yeah.
He's probably 40.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any arm either.
Yeah, no big deal. I mean, like you say, sometimes there's a formula that works for you, innit?
What were that next generation then, a Liverpool team, you know, that young, exciting?
Do you know what? It was a tough couple of years to first start with, because obviously they'd gone from, like, they'd been winning everything to then the new generation coming through, and it was, the mix wasn't quite right. Some of the players were maybe right at the end of their careers, and some of us were very young coming through, very raw. We had kind of none really in the middle. It was a difficult period.
I see what you mean there, because when I was looking at the players in that squad, it almost feels like squad's underachieved.
If Man United hadn't had a team they had, I think we'd have won more leagues. But it was a particular year, I think it was 95 or 96, where we were like 6 points clear at Christmas, and we ended up going to Marbella for 4 days at Christmas. And I'm thinking, you always think back, if we hadn't went to Marbella, it might have won the league. But you know, it's...
Did you have a good trip?
Great trip. obviously we were flying. To be fair, we did do some training out. It wasn't like just on the lash, but we had a couple of nights out.
Yeah. You had to walk to the pub and back.
Yeah, but I think it was the team we had and the young players we had. You know, if you look at even like McManaman, who was unreal to play with as a footballer. He was like one that doesn't get enough credit for me at Liverpool. Yeah. He never really gets talked about, but he was frightening as a footballer. You know, Romy Fowler, Michael Owen, the Gerrards, all them kind of players, Redknapps, you know. Don Hutchinson was there for a bit. A lot of good young players, but maybe we just didn't have the right discipline at times. I hate to say that, because I don't think it was like we were drinking every night of the week. I just think we were doing maybe a little bit too much of it, and without the right advice. Not complacent. I think we probably just needed a leader. We needed someone in the group, or maybe one of the senior players.
Come on, lads, it's time for all.
Yeah, maybe just to pull us in a little bit. As young lads, if you're out and you're having a good time, you end up having one more, don't you? One more leads to ten more.
There's the stuff about the Spice Boys, and that they got a lot of bad publicity.
Yeah, I mean, with the 96 FA Cup final, we had to wear white suits. That was probably the... David James was modelling. David James was modelling for Armani. So he was well in with Armani, believe it or not. So they came up with this idea, I don't know why.
Did nobody say what? Hold on a minute.
I was pretty young, I was fairly young, so I wasn't really going to try and overrule anyone, but... I think maybe some of the senior pros might have said something. I'm not sure how much Armani paid for that involvement, because they got a lot of publicity out of that.
Yeah. Put it on when they looked, just so you think, I look good, twat.
I mean, I think me and Ray tried them on next to each other. And back then, suits were always a bit baggy as well, aren't they? You know what I mean? It looked like a man from Del Monte. I tell you what, it was the hardest thing ever was to find a pair of shoes to go with it. I think if we won the FA Cup, then... It might have been forgotten. It might have been a good laugh about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've still got my suit. I tried it on, and it still fits me to this day. That's how baggy it was back then. It still bloody fits me.
The like Tom Hanks in Big.
Yeah. I took it on the. I did a show for BT, and I took it on TV. And Danny Baker tried the jacket on and the tie, and even he was like, Jesus.
Did you play in that cup final?
No, I should have played it with the one there, wouldn't I? I mean, that was another... The reason why I was talking about it, two days before, I went down to London, and Roy Evans had pulled myself in, Razor, separately into his team hotel, and said, listen, you've played in, you know, so many games, coming through to the final, but I ain't going to play you. And my heart just sank. Like, you know, that one opportunity you think especially against Man United as well. Liverpool Man United FA Cup finals don't come around too often. It's for me, it's the pinnacle of that. And then obviously, Razor's my roommate, he'd gone in. So I'm thinking, oh, please let him be playing. He wasn't playing.
Not without tonight.
Yeah, so he wasn't playing either, so I thought, oh, this could end up bad. No, and then obviously, we had to go training then after that. And I think it was just, we were very deflated. For me, I still feel as though I should have played in that game. But obviously, you've got to back yourself to play, aren't you? You want to play.
Yeah.
But the manager has to make a call on them. He signed Babs and Scales for decent money as well. I'd obviously come through the system, so it's sometimes easier to maybe leave a younger boy.
Yeah, I think you always feel a bit of a victim of that. You're easy to drop. Yeah. Easy to drop if you've come through and.
So was it the same in Liverpool then with obviously Fowler? How long did it take for them to get recognised as basically world class players?
We need to tie these down. I mean, Robbie, because obviously I'd known him, we'd started at like 9, 10 year olds together, so I'd seen him come right through and I knew how good he was. And he's just a natural goal scorer. You can't teach for Robbie Fowler.
Yeah.
You know, like Tiger Woods, it's a golf ball. Robbie Fowler, it's a football like that. It just makes a funny noise. Mm. It's like a swoosh. It's just incredible how he hits a football.
Eye the foot as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Foot
and mentally, he was just so tough. He had that winning mentality, but also he was just so natural.
Did he shave your eyebrows off?
He shaved my eyebrows. He shaved stripes in my legs. I went to Marbella on an end of season trip, which was quite a bizarre trip because Robbie Williams, the singer, came with us as well.
You've got a look at it now. You could be a tribute artist.
wish I had his cash. but he came with us, so it was a bit of a, we were all a bit, I don't know. But he was into his football, Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
So we're out, he was a big drinker back then, Robbie, as well, Williams, that is. So we used to take, me and Razor used to have a proper session with him. They got me really drunk one night.
They got you?
Well.
You got yourself really drunk.
No, but me and Razor used to do daft stuff before we'd even go out. We'd be like necking bottles of stuff. Bottles of like daft stuff, like full bottles, and then going out for like a full session afterwards. It wasn't good. And I remember this night, they done me actually. I remember thinking, you've seen me drink, haven't you?
Yeah, I've put it into it a couple of times.
But they used to call me Hollow Legs because they didn't know where I put it. And I remember this particular night, it was the first night I've ever been boozing where I thought, phew, not feeling too right here.
I'm pissed for you.
Yeah, and. They took advantage of me, yeah. They shaved my eyebrows, both of them, stripes in my legs. But I woke up and I was that drunk the next day. I never even noticed for about, I think it was about half a day. Seriously, about half a day. And then for a laugh, I decided to draw eyebrows on with a marker pen. So I had two eyebrows drawn on a marker pen, and I was sat by the pool, and I was just like, I was rubbing my legs down, and I looked at my legs and went, shaved stripes. So it was getting worse as the day was getting on. But
just one stripe with three for going your shots.
A couple on one leg and one on the other.
Were you fuming or did you just let them get on with it?
I'm not really like that. I think if I was a bit older, I might have been later in my career because I just thought if I react here,
it's just going to be worse.
But if it's bad with the marker pens on my eyebrows, I was just so embarrassed going out. But I drank through it.
who was the biggest character in that generation? You've got Colin Moore, David James, but then
The dressing room was full of them. I mean, Razor was always the one that you'd pick because Razor was just a unique character in all aspects. But he was the life and soul, really. Like, he loved the Christmas party. So
that's gone now.
Yeah, like the build up to the Christmas parties back then were unreal. Like Razor would have like when December started, he'd have like a countdown sheet up on the wall. So like 17 days to the Christmas party. Next day he'd come in, 16 days before. And obviously the managers hate stuff like that. They'd come in and see it, and Razor would be like, he'd be so giddy about it. And obviously the fancy dress and stuff was massive for Razor and some of the other players. They loved it. Fancy dress, just best. They'd be thinking months in advance of what they're gonna wear. I mean, realistically, you should have been thinking about your next game, but fancy dress.
Wearing on 13th of December.
Yeah. Razor, he sometimes liked to wear two outfits. So he'd come out in one, and then halfway through the night, he'd slip off and put another one on.
That's his commitment to the cause.
Yeah. Right? But this particular one, he had this spike with Cantona, where obviously that big, he turned his collars down back on Cantona. When Cantona had come back after his ban, we'd played at Old Trafford, and Razor turned his collars down in a bit of a barging match with Cantona. So he said to me, he says, I've got a right one for the Christmas party. So obviously he'd come as, I think it was like, a King Henry or King Henry VIII or something originally, and then halfway through the night he changed into a Man United kit, but instead of it saying 7 Canton, I said 7 cunt and a half on the back. If I can say that. So it's like that was just his thinking. He had this bizarre brain razor, which was a bit have a child at the time, but listen, there's some of the things I can't really discuss. But
it's always sad to go to the club shop and get that. what name do you want?
he was. I don't know, but I think with Razor as well, I remember him saying to the manager one day, he was just doing a team tour, he said, "Don't worry about it, just give me the ball." He said, "I'm like an artist, Gaffer." He said, I see the picture, I just paint it. That's what he said to him. To Roy Evans, like, we're just going, oh. He was a wholehearted lad, but he was bonkers.
Would you want him in the trenches?
Oh, yeah, Jesus Christ. I mean, we've been out a couple of times on nights out and lads have kicked off and he just stuck me in the car and said, "You get in there, young, I'll just sort this out."
And wouldn't mess with him,
no. I mean, look at the head on him. See the big head on him? It's frightening.
But then that landed on your nose.
But you know what?
That landed on that nose.
But what I must say is, it takes a lot to get him. No, you know, you can abuse Razor Ruddock. You can call him fat, whatever you wanted to. He won't bite. But if you had a pop of me or one of his friends or someone else, that's when you lose to lose
that's
it.
Problem.
But,
what, 98, 99? Roy Evans in charge, and then they bring Gerard Houllier in as a joint manager. I mean, that's not something that's happened before. And what was going on there? And how was that for the club? Where they both there was a joint management?
I've never seen anything like it, because obviously I think as a player, again, these boys will know, you need someone who's your gaffer, don't you?
Yeah.
Whereas you had to have a meeting with Roy and a meeting with Gerard Houllier, so you have to have two separate meetings. And it just didn't seem to really work.
So that as a player, when they're both joint managers, were you thinking, what the fuck's happening here?
Yeah.
This is Liverpool football.
And I think there was a little bit of loyalty in that with Roy. I think they just didn't want to get rid of Roy, me personally. Because, like...
Is that being completely undermined?
Well, a little bit, but I think they didn't want to... Rather than maybe saying to Roy Evans, "Do you want to go upstairs and maybe sit on the board or whatever, or go and sit in the director's box, we'll make you a joint manager." I think because the love of the club had for Roy Evans, they kind of gave him this role. And I think eventually... It wasn't going to last. I don't think it was ever going to last. And I think the club...
It's a little bit of a circus, really.
Yeah.
It's Liverpool football.
That was it. But
and we've got two managers. What?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And direction-wise for your players, you need a boss, don't you?
It must have been tough if you've been in the dressing room and in and around the dressing room for all them years and then suddenly, boom, gone.
Yeah.
Because it's probably going to be totally different.
And all the players love Roy Evans. Roy was the favourite. For maybe because he was a little... No, I mean, he wasn't... disciplinarian Roy at all. Maybe that's why the players liked him a bit. Maybe he did need someone like Houllier to come in and sort that side out, which he certainly did. I think we all when it happened, we all went, "What?" A little bit, you know, joint managers.
Yeah, it's a bit of a piss.
I don't know if it'd ever been done before, to be honest. Yeah. It might have been the first
time ever. Premier League, I don't think.
No.
What did you make of Houllier when he came in, you know, that first meet here?
Yeah, I mean, things were changing. Discipline was different, but I think Gerard was just all about getting the discipline right from his side. He knew what was going on a little bit too much.
Did the players buy into it, the discipline side?
I think he got rid of Razor and a few of us pretty quick.
That must have helped Gerard, did it?
I think if I remember right, he asked Razor what his name was, I think, or something was being, I think he knew. But he was just like
pissing off a bit.
Sometimes that's what they're doing. They try and wide you up, chuck a little one in to rub you up the wrong way, and then you go, "Right, I need a manager to get out of here."
Coming to the end of your career at Liverpool, does that come into a natural end? Did you expect it? Or?
I didn't. I was absolutely devastated. When I left Liverpool, I signed a 5-year contract on the Monday and signed for Leeds on the Thursday after. So 3 days later, after signing a 5-year contract, I was at Leeds.
Why? What?
Well, me and Houllier, we weren't the best of mates. But to be fair, he picked me. He used to pick me. This was a bizarre thing. I think sometimes you can have a relationship like that. And he pulled me in and we'd had a conversation. I'd been playing left back that season. And he said, "I'm going to sign Ziga." Christian Ziga, obviously, our new German international top player. And I just said, "Well, okay." I know he's a left back, but you know, is there a competition for positions then, or is he just going to play? Yeah. And he just kind of said to me, "Listen, he's going to start, and you'll be back on the bench." And I was like, "Listen, I've had enough of being on the bench. I played over 35 games of the season before, whatever it was, 33 games. What I want," I said, "I ain't going back to that again. I'm at a different stage in my career now. I want to play regular football, week in, week out." And he said, "Right." He said, "Well, what do you want to do?" I said, "I don't know. I said, I need to have a think about it." And he said, "Oh, there's clubs interested." So I was thinking, you know, straight away. All the way ready. I'm thinking, "Well, hold on a minute." I said, "That, you know," I was quite shocked because I generally seen myself play Liverpool my whole career.
Yeah. So who give you the contract then? If he knew that.
Houllier. I know, it's bizarre, isn't it? But maybe the Ziga thing just happened. You don't know, sometimes these deals...
Yeah,
I think it came available, yeah, and then obviously things changed, but... I mean, I was devastated. I mean, I went away at a conversation with my agent afterwards, and it was, I was literally just a bit devastated that had happened, really. You know, we're in talks for a five-year contract one day, and then next, a few days later, I'm literally driving in my car to possibly speak to two or three different football clubs. It was heartbreak, really, for a lad who'd stood on the cop as a young kid, wanting, dreaming of playing for Liverpool, eventually gets into the position where things are going great for me, and I'm down the road, driving down the M62. Me and my agent went to the Malmaison in Leeds, sat down with Peter Isdell.
It's good bar in bottom of the air. What a place.
Well, I thought we were going to do the Malmaison today, to be honest. We ended up in an office.
But that, no, that coffee all right?
Yeah, it's all right. No, there's no brandy here. But no, I went to the Malmaison. I met Peter Isdell, and I was waiting for David O'Leary to arrive. David was on his way. You know, we all know about Peter Isdell and the way he liked to spend money. But he was very much a Leeds United fan and very much sold it to me in that aspect. And he told me the ambitions of the club. And then obviously when David O'Leary got there, he just said, didn't think he'd ever become available. That's what he said to me. And it's funny because I see him last week at a football game and he said to me, he said, you won't believe this. He said, when you come available, he said, I couldn't believe that the club were going to sell you. And he said, a few weeks later, Hulé rung him and said, made a mistake.
Yeah.
So it's good to know that.
Is that the first time you found out?
First time I found out that a few weeks ago. That right. said to Ollie, I made a mistake there, you got a good one, you know what I mean? So even though, you know, I had my fallouts with Hulé in a little way, it's kind of good that he kind of said that. Probably should have told me, but I found out 20 years later. 18 years later, sorry.
Can I come back?
But no, then O'Leary turned up, and I think me wanting to play centre-half, he said to me, where do you want to play? I said, centre-half. He said, right. He said, a lot of competition. So who have you got? He says, oh, Lucas Ranaby, who was like a Leeds legend,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and a great defender, Woodgate. And it was, I think he just signed Doobie the year before from Chelsea.
So Rio wasn't there?
Rio wasn't there at that point. And I thought, well, I just, you know, you look at the competition, don't you, and I think, I can get ahead of them. And he said to me, he said, whoever's in the team and they play well, they stay in the team. And I thought, well, that's what Hulé should have said to me, when I left.
Yeah.
And if he had said that, I probably would have stayed. Mm. that's how small the margins are in your football career sometimes. Maybe the conversation go a different way. I might have never left Liverpool.
You arrive at Leeds, and then, I mean, you don't get much more of a confidence boost. You know, you scoring at the San Siro. Is that?
Yeah,
that is.
I mean,
that's an iconic goal for all Leeds fans, and I suppose. Goal for you. The one that stands out.
I didn't score many, so yeah. That's the only goal.
Another one.
Yeah. No, I think the whole Champions League experience and to get a goal in such an iconic stadium, a stadium that, being honest, I used to watch on the telly.
Even just to play in it,
And to be fair, when you're playing them stadiums or you get in them dressing rooms, they ain't what you think. It's like it's proper old school. It's not like plush.
Yeah.
Like the stand stadium, it's not nice. It's not really that nice inside the dressing room. It's just vast.
Ruin the dream here. Ruin the illusion. Bad Champions League. No, San Siro, you scored.
We'll spend some nice lighting on that. A couple of nice pictures.
I don't know what you expect sometimes, but it's because it is that big. And I remember we trained on it now before, just to kill you again. The pitch was rubbish.
Champions League. It's on Tuesday night.
You're going to try and play the Stockport, but
no, but it was, the pitch was crap. I mean, look at the Champions League pitches now. I was working pitch side of the week for Liverpool. It was like a carpet.
Yeah.
And we're near at the end of the season.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, so I remember it was bobbly. It was a bobbly pitch. It was hard to play on. It was actually put it in good areas. Get up the field. That's how bad it was. But no, listen, I mean, the Leeds fans at that night.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff in football, but I've never seen a relationship between players and fans. We were on the pitch with the fans for an hour after the game having a sing song. They sing a song, then they select a player, we'd sing a song, and you know, whatever. And it was just back and forth. Mainly it was Gary Kelly singing songs with the fans, the old Irish lads, not the Irish boys I like.
Yeah.
I love the sing songs. But it was just, I don't think you'll ever see that again in football.
I was reading a comment about that. It was a BBC pundit said that it was the greatest example of player fan bond that he'd ever seen and probably ever will see.
It was phenomenal. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, every person I meet in Leeds was at that game. So I don't actually know how many was there. Every person I ever meet was at that game. I've heard some great stories. I remember meeting a lad in a lap dancing club, actually, shouldn't we? Now I've got a missus. But this was back in the day, and you know, when it was just like...
It was a late drink.
Yeah, it was a late drink. You wouldn't know about them, Paul. You wouldn't know. So anyway, I was in the obviously just having a drink, and this guy's chatting to me. He says, "I've got a bone to pick with you." I said, "What's that?" He says,
"You say I've got a bone." Yeah.
He said, "I broke my leg when you scored that goal, because the seating at the San Siro is like it's tiny. So if you stand behind the seat, you've got to watch yourself." And he said, "When you scored, obviously all the Leeds fans just went mental." Oh, yeah. He said, "I went hurtling down about 12, 15 rows." And broke my leg that night. So you know, the atmosphere there was it was incredible. But some of the stories I've heard from like lads have said to me, literally, that was my best night in football ever. Best away game I've been to was the San Siro. It's obviously not a bad city as well for the fans to travel. Yeah. But crazy night. I mean, we were drinking beer on the pitch. I mean, imagine that now, Champions League. We've got cans of lager on the pitch. Yeah. The fans having a bit of a sing-song. I'm getting back to beer all the time, but it was kind of nice to do that.
The Leeds fans still, like, we were looking on Twitter, and on the day of that goal, they all still say, "Happy Don Matteo Day."
Yeah, I mean, I was last week of the game, the Wolves game, they were still singing it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going 18 years on, they're still singing that song. But yeah, I think it was an iconic night for the club, because we qualified for the next stages by getting the draw.
Who was marking you when you scored?
Don't know, actually. There were some good players in their team. I don't think they'd risk putting Maldini on me because I'd lose him too easily.
Paolo.
But I'll tell you about Paolo Maldini. We played him at Elland Road. This was a classic, this. And David O'Leary used to describe all the players to him before the game. He used to love talking about him as if he knew him like his best mates. He'd go, "Oh, seen Paolo. Elliot." I'd go, "What?" He went, "Yeah, seen Paolo Elliot." He said, "Hey, he looks good. He smells good." But he said,
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can't fucking run. I'm thinking he's quick as fuck, Gaffer. And you can read the game, what you're on about. But he's like, you know, he talked about it best mate. And like after the game, be like, Paolo, can I get your shirt and all this? You know,
I've got something I'll have to shave.
Not even smell good.
Well, I think even for players though, it's, you know, when you swap shirts and stuff, and I think Maldini ended up giving everyone a shirt. I think he must.
He just carries a box.
I think he must travel for one for everyone because that's who everyone's shirts. And I think that is true with Milan. I think they had to carry extra shirts because everyone wanted Maldini's.
Who's best shirt that you've?
I've got from when we were at Stoke, Harold Cannavaro's. We played against him in Austria. Mm. I said played against
him. We played Real Madrid.
We run around.
Yeah, we run around. Yeah. 1-0 though, weren't
it? 2-0. 2-0. But
I think I got off by then.
No, went on. They probably played at 30%.
Yeah.
And we were chasing his asses.
Yeah.
Absolutely chasing his asses. But yeah, I got Cannavaro's signed shirt at home.
I don't know. I've got a few iconic ones that mean more to me than the name. But I think the best one I got, because I felt I got the better of him, was Figo. You know, like in a game where, you know, sometimes for me, when I played up against players, I had to raise my game 100 times to my top limit to even compete with you. And I remember, and I swapped with Figo after the game in the Bernabeu, and he didn't want to give me it at first. Because I think, you know, sometimes the players they don't like it, you've had a good game against them. Especially the top players.
Yeah.
The top players can sulk a bit, can't they? Mm-hmm. I just thought maybe I kicked him a bit too much throughout the game and I got his shirt. The bad thing about that was my mum washed it. and it shrank about four sizes.
Since you've been washed.
Yeah. I was chatting to him about the other day and said, tell you what, mother, it's not a nightmare about that. I said, a nice little bit of dirt down the back of it, looking brilliant. Yeah. I said, come on. And it was
what like, are you doing?
Four sizes smaller, and it'd be bloody drier.
Are we not like showing some little boys' figures?
Yeah, exactly.
It's size 8 to 9. It's not all your Louis Figo.
You've got all the shirts on the wall this size. You've got Figo.
Just in a
mantelpiece. Yeah. Not mantelpiece, a little picture frame.
I thought it was a bit tall. But yeah, no, I had to. Yeah. You know, I've got Beckham ones, you know, and people like that. I've got Giggsy one. I've got some good ones. I think they're ones, you know, your week in, week out players that play against the Premier League sometimes, for me, mean a bit more. I've not sold them ones. So yes.
That squad, though, like we just said, that even the fans, the fan player relationship, but the relationship within the squad as well, that it looked like they were real band of brothers there.
You always have your cliques in football.
The character of the team.
Yeah, you have your cliques in a lot of teams where people knock about together, and you have your muckers, don't you? You drive in with. But that Leeds team was kind of like we just all knocked about together. Like all of us, we did everything together. Maybe at the time as well, there was quite a few people single.
Yeah.
And I think if you're single and you haven't got kids, it's a bit easy to do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we kind of at that point, there's quite a few of us were in that position. So yeah. But yeah, great spirit.
What was Gary Kelly like?
Metal. Love Kells. I mean, I was in Marbella with Kells once, and the next thing he just disappeared off the port, and he was actually in the water, over the port, and I just jumped in. Like, I think he couldn't get out. No steps out, is there? Eventually, when he got out, he saw the fag in his mouth.
I think
about that story, I was with Liverpool, he was with Leeds, and we just bumped into each other. And like I think he used to bang around with a lad called Kevin Sharp, who used to play for Leeds back in the early 90s. They were best mates, them two together, double act. But Kells was, I mean, another one at Leeds who, you know, one-man club. There's not many players who have a career where they just stay at the same club. He did. But yeah, great character. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing at Leeds with these so-called foreign guys, you know, Big Verdukes and Ollie Decourt, players like that, they come in. They're the only two probably coming in and out of the groups at times because they found it a bit
too much.
Well, yeah, Verdukes liked a fag and a couple of pints, and he'd be off. He'd drive everywhere. Verdukes, very laid back guy, lovely fella. But you'd have 2 pints, a pack of fags, and he'd be gone. You know what I mean, that's what all the foreign lads were like. That Ollie Decourt, French, cool, laid back. You know, he'd just come in and out, see us lot dancing on tables. And I'm off for a nice meal.
Fidelka, can you just nip us up?
Oh, no chance of it. Tiny guy.
The deal with a coin.
Oh, yeah. That was, well, basically, I don't know why we do stuff like this. But yeah, I think Rio Ferdinand's mentioned it, hasn't he? Well, I don't know why I mentioned that, actually. But yeah, no. So basically,
fuck off, Rio.
Get out. Jesus. But no, before a game, money just starts off with a coin. But back then, it was always a 50 pence piece because it was a horrible one to hold. Yeah. So you had it in your hand, the old 50s. I don't know why. It was just choose the worst coin to hold. It's not that we looked into this much. So he'd obviously say I'd started with a coin. Any breaks in play, like corners or free kicks and stuff, you could pass the coin. So I'd pass it to Parky there. You'd have to take it. You couldn't refuse it. And then whoever had the coin at the end of the game.
Was it just a pass or did it have to be stealth? You know, like go to shake someone's hand and then they have to take it on.
He was trying to keep it quiet. Obviously, it didn't work.
You're flicking it.
I mean, for example, one of the games against Bolton away.
You did it more than once?
So I remember, I don't think Ian Hart knew about it. I was coming off, injured, done my hamstring for a change, coming off, and then I went to give it to Artie, he'll shake his hand, and he's coming down, he's like, what are you doing? Just let go of me. So obviously I'm trying to give him the 50k. So in the end, he's had to throw it onto someone, but you know, he's like, I don't think he knew what was going on. I don't know why we did stuff like that.
At the end of the game?
At the end of the game, there'd be a forfeit. You know, whatever it might be, drink something dodgy.
Yeah.
I never ended up with that coin, mate. Yeah. Rio says in his interview that he thought I had it, but I'm sure there's no way I'd
never.
No, I've
played it before.
I'm assuming keepers were exempt.
No, I wasn't exempt. No, I think, I mean, you know, talking about Rio, you know, he was, I have to mention him because he was a Rolls Royce of a footballer. Yeah. And you know what as well? Great off the field.
Yeah.
He loved his time at Leeds. You hear him speak about Leeds, he loved it. Great, he loved his time. Best centre-half to play with. I mean, the Leeds fans won't accept it because if they say Radebeul or Woodgate, but I can't have that Real wasn't as good as them, but I think Real was better than them. Yeah. That's just my honest, just my opinion, you know.
At the time at Leeds or after he'd left Leeds?
Both. I think he was just, I mean, he came into Leeds and for me personally, we just hit it off as a partnership. And what I loved about him was he's a moaner. You wouldn't think it. He moaned more than anyone in that dressing room. He'd dig people out. Things that you don't think people would do, he'd done it. He dug you out. You're having one, don't get your head together. And sometimes when you've got a little partnership like that, you need that.
He'd have still been quite young when he went to Leeds, wouldn't he?
Yeah. So, and he'd come with a big price tag. Yeah. I think it was a world record.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
18 million. So he'd come with that. Yeah, I had to mention him in this because he was such a class act.
Yeah.
On and off the field. I seen him in Portugal last year, actually. Just bumped into him randomly. And, I was out having a few beers in Villabora and he was there with his mate. He was in unbelievable shape. And,
yeah,
I know you're kind of trying to hide yourself. He's like, and we literally just took off again and we had a few beers together. I think he dropped me off for a change. It wasn't like me going on first. But, yeah, it was just great to see him pick up and we chatted about that. You know, them days and about how he loved his time at Leeds, which for an ex-Man United player to come out and say that sometimes is difficult because of the hatred between them two clubs is big.
He probably can though because of what he's done.
Yeah, of course.
If he'd been mediocre at Man U, wouldn't have preferred it at Leeds.
Of course. Yeah. And I think maybe the Leeds fans say Radebeul and Woodgate because he went to Man United.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Alan Smith thing with the Leeds fans. Alan Smith was a Leeds legend for so many years and said, I'll never serve Man United. Mm-hmm. Ironically, ends up serving Man United, doesn't he? So there's certain players that have crossed.
That's the thing with football. It's when we spoke about before, where footballers are basically they're just doing it for themselves.
Yeah.
The Alan Smith did not think, I presume, did not think for 1 minute, I might not sign for Man U because I play for Leeds and the Leeds fans will batter us.
I think Fergie had been keen on Smithy the way he played for quite a while. And I think with Alan, because I was tight with Alan, that I think when he went to Man United, that if your options are Aston Villa, no disrespect to Aston Villa, Tottenham or whoever else they were, Man United, even as an ex-Liverpool, you have to go, hold on, where am I going to go and win medals? You ain't going to win them at them other clubs, are you? Because back then there was only Arsenal and Man United that were really winning the league. So if Arsenal aren't going to buy you and Man United are, that's probably he's decided. But
I suppose the winning those medals and achieving something's got to outweigh the legacy that you have at one club, maybe. Rio Ferdinand and Alan Smith in mind at Leeds. Because they would be legends at Leeds.
I still think if Alan were coming back to Leeds to do some work like Legends game or something, the fans would still, they'd soon forget, in a way, once he gets out on that football field. Because he's a proper Leeds lad, Alan.
Yeah.
Alan was a Leeds lad. He's from Rothwell, you know what I mean? And his family still live in the area now. He's a proper Leeds player. He played like a Leeds player. When you talk about Leeds players over the past, you think from this.
Rottweiler.
Yeah, that's how they were. You know, that's how the great team in the 70s played. You know, all them boys got wired in, didn't they?
Yeah.
And he could. He'd give it out.
It was horrible.
He'd give it out. I mean, he used to say to me before the games that he was looking forward to playing against Keown and Adams and them boys. He loved it. He loved that and that physical. I mean, he gave Maldini, believe it or not, a hell of a game at Elland Road. But I mean, I'm talking. Maldini didn't know what he did. Not many did that.
Wasn't playing against that, really.
No.
That's when you only go to play a loyal to clubs, you've got to do it for yourself.
Yeah. There's a blank check in front of you.
Not so much. When you get to that level, it's not so much the money.
Saying that as Yorkshire winning a title, aren't they?
it's not even the money. Because if you're on 100 grand a week and someone offers you 120 grand a week, you can't know much difference with 120 is 100.
Yeah.
You have a good goal though.
Yeah. You might go out Thursday as well. But there's not really much difference. So if you're at that level where you're earning £100,000 a week and you've got a chance of winning leagues, winning cups.
But there's points in there in anyone's career. I mean, if I'd stayed at Liverpool, I would have stayed and won all them trophies that they won. I wouldn't know too much about it, but I didn't. I left and went to Leeds. You don't win anything at Leeds. So it's like, for me, that split second, your whole career and life can be a total different way.
Mm. Liverpool won the treble, didn't they?
Treble, and then they win the Champions League in 2005. You're thinking, Jesus Christ, I can be part of that. I still think to myself, if I'd stayed, I probably would have been part of it.
Yeah.
Well, most definitely.
Hard.
It is hard, and I find it tough because, and even it was all my mates winning it that I grew up with, a lot of them.
Yeah.
I was pleased for them to all go and win it, but you still got that kind of bit of a jealousy thing where you go, fucking wish I'd won them trophies.
Yeah, that.
I wish I'd stayed for that extra couple of years, you know what I mean, and got that. But
then you can also look back and say, well, I never had my San Siro moment.
Yeah, of course. I know, I mean, I never regret, because I think regret's a bad word, man. You can't regret.
But from that moment, when you go out the Champions League semi-final and just losing it all, demise from that point.
Well,
what's happening? What's going on? I mean,
well, let's be honest. We lost Real Ferdinand, was the first big player to leave. You know, 30 million to Man United. That affected the whole vibe, because you think you go from being a side trying to achieve things and build a squad to, hold on a minute, now players are looking to get away. And Real might have been an exception because he was the one exceptional player. You know, and he was 30 million quid, which was another record that he broke, I think, at the time. And then obviously we lost some more players after that, and then we just eventually, you're losing the nucleus of your best players. It's going to affect you. And training wasn't like it was. Training become lethargic, and it just wasn't. The vibe wasn't right within the place. It changed completely.
Is that because a lot of the lads didn't want to be there?
Well,
we're trying to force a move.
Possibly. Well, I think the season after the Champions League, we missed out on the Champions League, getting back in it by a couple of points, I think. And I think players wanted to get back in the Champions
League. They've experienced it, and
they've
tasted a bit of life.
Did the club need the money? So is that why it started?
For sure. But when you're overspending on players.
The club was ran.
Yeah.
There was a failing there in the way the club was ran, really. They put all their eggs in one basket, spend.
Yeah. Even look at the Robbie Fowler, he's one of my best mates in football. You know, I was going to be flat in Leeds, going up in the lift, and Rizdal had a flat in the same complex. And the lift doors open, and it's Robbie and his dad. I was like, what are you doing here? I thought he'd come to see me. I didn't even know he'd signed for Leeds that day. Because that's how much of a secret it was that he was going, because obviously him leaving Liverpool was a wrench as well, so he obviously kept it quiet. But just seeing that happen, I wasn't expecting it. Because you think you've got, at this point, with Robbie Keane, Viduka and Smith, and then Fowler. I know you probably need four clubs, but we're talking about them four players. We're probably four of the highest paid players in the Premier League at the time. Mm. You know, and you haven't got the same income as what Man United and Liverpool, all the teams I've got coming through the door every week.
But they seem to be buying all these players. They're not selling anybody.
Yeah. But then you've got my point from that is, it was like Smithy and Viduka were a lethal partnership up front, and it really worked. And then you've got to who can I play now? You've got to try and work all four of them in, because all four of them weren't happy about not playing.
Yeah,
you know, if you think about it, leave any of them out, so the whole logistics of the squad changed a little bit as well. And it was right throughout the squad that I think as well, that, you know, even in my positions, there was a lot of lads were on big money but weren't playing as well. So you can't, you know, you've got lads in 40, 50 grand a week probably, and not even in the team or not even in the bench. But when you're going back to that area, that was huge though. So I think we were giving people, in my opinion, contracts of big money, and I'm thinking, why are they getting these big contracts? Mm. Because if you're not playing, then you shouldn't be earning the great big money, should you? And that's my opinion.
Sure, you would sense at the time that there
was some bad decisions being made. I think it was very easy to make that assumption, even from the outside, never mind being on the inside.
So all the way down the pecking order as well to youth level, were they?
I've documented it myself. I said, I remember being, we used to have a room there for icing your legs and stuff. I was in there icing my legs, and some young lad was moaning about earning, I think it was 7 or 8 grand a week. And, you know, he was nowhere near the first team. Nowhere near the first team, and he wasn't good enough for the first team. But I heard him moaning about it. I was like, and I went mental. And I went mental. You know, I mean, I literally lost the plot. I was like, this has to stop, stuff like this. This isn't how football should be. You've got to earn your...
Yeah.
You've got to play games and earn a certain respect to get decent money. But to a young kid moaning about getting that kind of money.
Yeah.
You know, his age, I was getting £27.50 a week.
Am I right in saying, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, did Rizdal get you in and Viduka to, they wanted to loan you to a finance company?
We were leased out to an American finance company, apparently. So they owned us for a certain period of time until Leeds played the loan back.
Did they ask you about that? Did you have to agree to that?
We had to agree to, yeah. But I did, because I was like, whatever. You know, it wasn't going to affect me getting my wages, it wasn't going to affect anything. But I was thinking, hold on a minute. We were in trouble here. Mm. And then apparently when we sold Rio, they paid debts off then to the finance company. So you think about it, when you buy Rio for 18 million, you sell it for 30, you think you're making £12 million profit. You're probably not. You're probably just paying
me and Viduka off.
Yeah. The interest.
Yeah. You know, these guys aren't borrowing money for...
Yeah.
But yeah, there was that was like, I knew there was big problems when that happened then, really big problems.
Am I right in saying you go into the dressing room and for the, you know, when the shit's hit the fan at Leeds,
yeah,
players are leaving left, right and centre, you go in the dressing room and ask players to take a deferral,
yeah,
on the wages?
Yeah. Well, yeah, basically the club had pulled me in as captain and just said, listen,
we're in the shit,
yeah, but we all knew that anyway. Yeah, they wanted to take a deferral. It was a 40% deferral, which I think was the highest ever in football at the time. Which for me, I didn't even think about it. As soon as you said that, yeah, I went, no, I didn't think it'd be a problem. I generally thought, and deferral means, if you don't know what it means you will get it back.
Yeah.
You're just deferring, so you get it back at some point, which, well, in the end we did anyway, so we should have just not made a fuss. But, yeah, it was a difficult conversation with the players, that.
Does that surprise you?
It took me by. I was really shocked, yeah. Really shocked.
Shocked that nobody would want to do it.
Well, not say nobody, but just the majority didn't really want to do it. There's a few that would have, yeah, and a few I think did privately behind the scenes, did it? I think Viduka did it privately because he was the highest earner. But yeah, I looked at all the players and they're all like, I don't really want to say who because it, you know, but I was just surprised that in general, so it wasn't like there was one or two, it was quite a few. It's all, oh, I'm at different stages of my career, Dom, and this. And I'm going, lads, it's a deferral, so you will get it back. You know, it'll be.
Have you got any reassurances that you get it back?
Well, just from what they're telling us. But I just thought we're getting it back anyway. And by the way, we're all earning fortunes at that point. So even if we do have to give up 40% of our wages for 1 week, is it the end of the world?
Yeah.
If you're earning even 10 grand a week and the club's in the shit and you've been earning it for 10, 15 years at a football club and someone's asking you to take a deferral for 1 week,
yeah,
it shouldn't be a problem for me.
That goes back to players being selfish and just thinking about themselves.
And yeah.
Did that cause a divide and change or anything?
Oh, yeah, it completely went. I mean, there's certain conversations after that for me of play. I don't think you have the same relationship after that.
So you were more disappointed in a few of them?
I was disappointed, yeah. And I think a lot of people were. I think I expected a few more to back me up a little bit, being honest. That's what I'd say. I'd expect a few more to go, yeah, Dom's right, I think we should do this. I'm probably going to get it back. And if we don't, we've all got a few quid anyway, so what's the bother? You know what I mean? And I think it was selfish, like you say. It was, you know.
What was the spin in the press at the time? Because did that come out in the press and the players had refused?
Yeah. 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 And in the end, we had to do it anyway. So
Why
couldn't we? We could have just made ourselves look like decent human beings and made the fans respect us even more by just doing it. In the end, we'd done it anyway. So what was all that about?
And were you represented in the press at that time? Was it out in the press that you were?
We just had to all go as a team, didn't we? So it was just as if we'd said no. I mean, I've said personally in dinners and stuff, and people, fans have asked me about it, I've said I would have deferred and would I'd still do it tomorrow. But
that must have been hard at the time. So did you get some stick from the fans and all that, and you can't turn around and say, I'll do it tomorrow?
No, I went to an AGM and had to sit there and basically, you know, we'd come to that agreement. So it's like, the fans kind of knew without saying who were alright to do it and the ones who didn't. People can work things out, they're not daft, are they, football fans? I mean, football fans get a lot of stick, but they ain't daft. They know within a football club, even on the pitch, which lads are trying and which ones don't try. They know the score. But it wasn't a good time, to be honest. You know, and you go from there to there within a couple of years, that was the hardest thing.
So did Ridsdale take full responsibility for it?
Well, he got the blame for it, didn't he? But the thing is, there, John, is that they have a board of directors that have to back his decisions as well. So yeah, he's going to them with. I think a lot of the board and Ridsdale himself, so they're all Leeds fans.
Yeah.
They're all Leeds fans, so it's like we'll take the risk on something that might happen.
That was some of the problem, that they were leading that club with their heart rather than their heads, even though they're businessmen.
Most definitely. And Peter, you know, I not just because he was good to us on the contract, Peter Ridsdale was the life and soul of it, you know, of like Champions League. after every game, he'd be singing on the piano, with a bit of banter, buying a lad some beers. He caught me coming out of the lift or getting the lift at daft times on Lake Como, playing the San Siro, get another bottle of red, lad. You know, so it's like, he had a lot of things probably wrong on that side. He'd be a great chairman to play under, but you know, people are going to say I'm saying that because financially he was good to us all. Wasn't just that. Yeah, he loved the football club.
So relegation, you know, like I said, on TV and everything, the emotion was more than clear.
Yeah.
You said Alan Smith in tears on the field.
We didn't play well. I think we were down before that day anyway, really. The performances were poor. And, yeah, I mean, the Alan Smith one was a class. I mean, I remember seeing Alan Smith and I was so gutted anyway, but he was just literally in tears. I just went and grabbed him, gave him a cuddle, actually. Because that's all I could think of at the time. Knowing one of your mates is like in a bad place, and we all were. Just grabbed all of them, and that was. And I remember just like trying to go to the fans and clap the fans and just thank them for all they've tried to do for us to get us out of that position. But we just didn't perform as players, and you have to take responsibility for what you've done. Because that team with the players we had just never should have went down. But you know, I always look back and think I did have a good go myself personally. I look myself in the mirror and say I had a go. But I still feel responsible.
Do you think your head dropped a bit after that, in terms of
career-wise? Yeah, definitely. It took me a bit to get going. In a way, yeah, I was going to leave Leeds because I didn't want to leave. But yeah, in the end, you know, I committed to Blackburn, and obviously Mark Hughes got the job. Didn't like me, so there was no chance of me playing there anyway. But yeah, it's funny how football changes so quickly. Even from a relegation to signing for Souness to Mark Hughes coming in, and I know that he doesn't really like me. Anyway, so
I was seeing you before you came in.
Well, just a Man U thing, I think. Yeah. I don't know what it was. I think he thought that I was a different person to what I really am. You know, you see Don Mayo used to go on the booze when he was younger, played in Liverpool. He'd probably seen me about and heard the stories about the drinking cultures and stuff like that. He didn't really know me as a guy who goes to train every day and trains hard and works hard on the football field, because that's what I did. That's what my career was built on, hard work.
Some big characters in that Blackburn team as well, though. You know, Bellamy, York, David Bentley. Savage.
Yeah.
What was he like? Jay Boothroyd? Was he alright?
What a...
Well, I wasn't the most hard working.
I'll tell you what, I'm not going to say a word. You know my thoughts on it. Right?
I know, you don't have to tell me.
Don't bother to you.
No. I think with Jay, you can't tell him anything. He's bigger than what he really is as a player as well. He came in thinking he was the main man, and you learn very quickly that you're not the main man. He had ability, but probably didn't have the quality to go with that at times, and wasn't consistent enough as a footballer. But I don't know, he was a bit, is it large, you call it, big time?
A little bit twat-ish.
I mean, and but the thing is, I tried to
You just made a word up there.
Twattish.
No, I tried to take... Yeah, but Parker, I tried to take...
Well, he weren't twattish.
I tried to take him under my wing a little bit. Because sometimes when you see players like that and you're a bit older, you think to yourself, can I get older and just say, fucking, you know...
Help him out.
Yeah, fucking don't be doing that. Don't be large either. Don't be driving that. Just keep things... You know, he borrowed a few of my cars off me and stuff to fucking get to training. I'd lend him a car or whatever and try and look out for him. But certain players you can't tell. And you know, they never seem to learn.
Just can't save some people, can you?
That's why.
You can't educate Paul.
Oh, into that, I've had no dinner. But I remember we were having an argument with Craig Bellamy when we were at Cardiff, and obviously Bella's just coming towards the end of his career, and he's having an argument with Craig Bellamy, saying, "Yeah, I'm on the upgrade of my career, and you're on the downgrade." And Bella's just like, "You fucking, are you kidding me? When we were at Blackburn, you got replaced by Shefky Coochie." I don't need to say another word. Big unit, Shefky Coochie. And Jay just shut him up. But he was, well,
at Blackburn, there were some big characters, like you say. I mean, you have to choose your place sometimes. Yeah. Like, you know, Sav and them boys come in, Bellamy. It's a tough school there. Some old pros in that dressing room.
Yeah, well documented some of the hard times that you hit while you were at Blackburn, and do you think
all
that?
I mean, I was
relegation.
I don't think the drinking was coming. Everything you're harping about drinking through. Like, yeah, I liked a pint, but I was only to be. I had a punt on the horses. I was betting a bit. I had a lot of horses. I owned a lot of horses. It's different when you're a horse owner to just having a punt. You think you're more involved. You think you're on the inner circle.
Yeah.
You think you know a little bit more than everyone else, which you don't. You're just getting fed some stuff from your trainer. You say, "Oh, this horse will win today. Have what you want on it." And you're thinking, "All right, that sounds all right to me.
I'll trust you."
Yeah, I'll trust you. But then you've got a few quid sat there because you know you bet to your means in life. If you earn £100 a week and you bet 10, that's what you're doing it. So if you're earning, I don't know, 40-50 grand a week, you're betting 5-10 grand a race because that's it. No, it sounds
relative.
It sounds blasé, but it's not blasé, is it? Because if you're earning big dough, you ain't gonna have 200 quid on a horse, in my opinion. Especially if you like a bet. You know what I mean? I think footballers have got addictive personalities as well. I think we can pick up anything that's bad for you along the way. But I think footballers are people that, I mean, I think gambling in football is an epidemic that's never been really unfolded. It's never really come out. I think there's so much of it going on. I think I wouldn't even know where to start with it. I think it happens week in, week out. I don't even think we've touched on it. We don't get any help on it either. And then gambling, if you think about addictions, gambling is the biggest one to kick. That sounds ridiculous because you can have one bet in one day and you can ruin a family's life and your future going forward. With drink, it'll take you a while to get through your dough. And you know, with drugs and stuff or whatever else it might be, it can take you a long time to get through it. You'll get through it. But with gambling, you can literally ruin things within a short period of time, and it's very. You can't also underestimate gambling. It's a real epidemic, and I've spoken about this before in football. There's more people doing it than what we all think, and it's so easy to put a bet on nowadays. At least when I first started playing, you had to go to the bookies.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Nowadays, you just pick your phone up.
It used to be like stars in their eyes, didn't it?
Yeah.
Walk into the bookies on the smoke. Yeah.
Tonight, Matthew, I'll have the 2:45 inch.
It should come out stinking of smoke.
I remember when I first started Liverpool, Ian Rush and Jan Mulby would be the bookmakers on the bus. Obviously, they had the most money. So you wanted to have a tenner on a horse, they'd take the best on the bus. That's how it was. And then obviously, nowadays, the lads want to have a bet. I don't have to tell you, mine. Or whatever, I'm having on the next race at Woody
Weatherby
or somewhere, you know, you don't have to tell anyone. It's like you can do it in secret a little bit, and it's bad. You know, I've had some daft bets over the years, I don't even know why I had them. But like you say, was I chasing something? I don't know. I'm pretty easy going, so I don't, you know.
The thing is, as well, you didn't need the money, did you?
No, at that point in my life, we do it now. I think 40s. I wouldn't like to have a box and put it all in when it could have been. It's not a good thing to be gambling, especially when you're playing football. These boys have played in the game. They'll have seen lads that have had big bets.
I've seen them on the way to a game. I've seen a 3-card brand hand with £8,000 in it.
Yeah.
Not all cash.
Cash, that was all I was going to say.
Like, probably a couple of grand of cash.
Yeah.
And then the rest, right, well, I'll on the way to a game.
So that's not, whoever's lost that.
I lost a bet. No, I'm only kidding.
Whoever's lost that, though, your head's, like, if it is a big, you know, I know it's retrospect to what you're earning, but if you've lost a big race or something, you've chucked however many thousands of pounds on, and you've lost that before a game, you're still going to, in the back of your head, fucking hell, it's like a lad who's on 500 quid a week has lost 2 grand.
Yeah. I think if you're earning that daft dough, I don't think you get that effect though. I think if you're earning fortunes and you have a decent bet and you lose, you could have won it the week after anyway, so it's not such an issue. I think it's further back when you were, you know, you're punting, you couldn't really afford to.
You kind of need to win. Yeah, I've seen lads come in from the change rooms at half time, checking the phone to see how the coupons getting on, or the horses coming on.
Yeah.
And that's when it affected. Did you say it affected you, Dom, when you were playing? Was it in the back of your head towards the end?
Probably a few games, but no, I wasn't. I've never been that money orientated. I wish I had been. It's kind of like not easy come, easy go, but it's like I wasn't fazed by winning or losing money.
Mm. So you've got it under control now, Sam?
Oh, completely. Yeah. I mean, when I had my daughter Louisa, I literally didn't stop overnight, but everything was, there was a purpose to my life. Yeah. Me not having any purpose or any, I didn't have to save for anything. It was just me. Mm. But then I had someone else to look after. My whole thing, perception changed of it. You know, I still have the odd bet now, but nothing. You know, like the lads talk about a coupon or something, a bit of summer, I'll have a punt, but well under control. And like you say, you know, my kids now, they're priority for the future. You know, I'm going to make sure they've got a decent pathway into their educations and life away. And for me, having the kids was the
game changer.
Correct. So I had a good time though as well. I must say,
I love that they are fucking rich.
I must say, you like, I don't want it to sound like it was boring because it had some right there. You know, Cheltenham, 2 or 3 days in Cheltenham with the boys, Aintree, you know, all these places, called Ascot. Oh man, come on, glorious Goodwood. You know, you're also. I've had winners in listed races. I've had some big winners myself. My horses won some big races. Unbelievable to be in that winning enclosure with your horse winning.
Yeah.
And you know, I've had some great times with the horse racing. So I don't want it to sound like it.
Yeah.
Because you know what? A day out of the races with the lads or the family or whatever, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I'll see you at Aintree next week.
And then Stoke after Blackburn, obviously, the big man here.
Yeah, he used to have to sea park his arse every morning.
Back in Harley,
right? He wasn't pretty sad either.
He's just stretching the hamstrings off.
Yeah,
he
used to love that one. He's all his birds down, just stretch them hamstrings.
And King Peach.
Yeah. But that was another good atmosphere. You know, even though the football wasn't great at times.
Oh, fucking dour.
It was dour, but it worked. It was effective. And I think half the battle was the dressing room. Mm. The dressing room was, if that was a bad dressing room, they wouldn't have got promoted that year. I think because the banter was good, and you obviously were a big part of that.
Well, that's right.
You know what? You can never be underestimated stuff like that, because people, I think, in football, you overlook just like, oh, it's all about the top players doing well, scoring the goals. It's not just about that, about getting promotion.
It's about the shit ones. The shit ones will make a few people laugh as well.
it's a full team effort, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I played in the first 16 games of that promotion season, and I was having 2 or 3 injections before every single game into my feet. I'd broken 2 bones in my foot. Remember them injections?
Yeah.
They were horrible. I had 8. I was having my soles of my feet injected. There's one place in your body you don't want to get injected. It's the soles of your feet. So week in, week out, I was having injected. I played the last game, I think, Cardiff, one of your old clubs. And Robbie Fowler was at Cardiff at the time, and I'd gone in. You don't take a doctor in the Championship. They didn't then. They did the away game. So the Cardiff team doctor was giving me...
Old Len? Old Gary,
he was giving me, like, painkilling injections into my broken foot before the game. And Robbie Fowler came in and was like, what are you doing? I thought, well, no, I just want to try and play a few more games and keep going. But I managed to get 16 games with 2 broken bones in my foot and having these local anaesthetics. I'd have 3 in my foot before every game, and sometimes in my knee. So, you know, in the end, I was just like, this isn't great. And I remember even last speaking to a few of the boys at Stoke, saying, what are you doing? You've got to be careful here, then, because of what happens to you later on. Like,
Any standout moments with Mr. Parkin here at Stoke?
His dance moves were always pretty good.
You know,
very underrated.
Very underrated. Definitely, I could tell you some Barnsley.
You should be nervous.
When we got promoted, we went to Magaluf for a few days. It was just chaos for the boys. Just a proper lads few days, boozing, dancing around.
I think the main song we're getting salt in the morning.
Yeah.
So listen, we've gone to the Premier League.
Yeah, we're all getting salt.
We're all going to get fucked up. Yeah. It's only a matter of time we're all getting fucked up.
Yeah, no, there was many a good time. I mean, we used to have some good card schools as well, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Bet a few card schools, bit of banter.
So you've listened to the podcast previously. Are they doing all right?
They're doing great. Yeah, I think, like you say, it's good to do something like this, isn't it? Because you know, if I'm sure we're parking and
it's Chris.
Chris, yeah.
I'm hitting off. That's got going. That's got to go.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. It's been a massive impression on the side.
No, it's you need to find something to do, don't you?
It's a bit like you're sort of doing your apprenticeship again.
Of course,
you're a different job.
Yeah. Correct. Absolutely. That is.
You've got to do the shit before you can.
Yeah,
you've got to do the shit before you can. Yeah. So you latch onto some bloke with a couple of microphones.
That's
what the Scottish boats come knocking, could you?
That would end it, you.
That one.
Well, cheers, Dom.
Cheers, Dom. Thank you very much. Yeah. Right, top man.
I've got another name now. I've got a name. So
it took you an hour and a half. Cheers, Simon.
Thanks a lot. We've been under the cosh back again. Like and subscribe everything on YouTube as always. Make sure you get
YouTube.
On YouTube. We're on everything now.
Fucking really.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks a lot. Cheers, Dom.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening.
Pleasure.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.